Welcome to Two Lit Mamas, a Kid Lit podcast for parents, teachers, and writers, and anyone who loves children's books. I'm Heather Kaufman Peters. I'm the mother of one teenage boy. I'm a preschool teacher and a writer.
And I'm Margie Ozimet. I'm mom to two boys, a middle school teacher, a former homeschooler, and a writer. Welcome to Two Lit Mamas, episode 52, the episode in which we lose all of your respect by behaving like fangirls.
Oh, yeah. So we've mentioned our queen, All Hail the Queen, many times, but it has taken us 52 episodes to finally devote an entire episode to the one and only
MPA. That's Margaret Peterson Haddix, for those of you that don't have her poster on your bedroom wall. Oh my God, if that was still a thing, I would totally have her.
Me too.
Maybe we could get one like her, like standing by a car looking badass or something, like by a robot child, since that's her jam.
I do have a picture of her. I could blow it up because she came and visited, and I had my nephew take his picture with her because I really want to take my
picture. Wait, you have a picture of you with her?
I have a picture of my nephew with her because I made him do it because I wanted one so bad. And I thought, no, that'd be weird. So I had him go take it.
She totally would have. She too, because she's like the nicest person in the world.
She is. You know what she makes me think of? She makes me think of, you know how like fourth grade teachers are like the best teachers ever. Like they're just that, like
they treat you like, but they're like, but they treat you like you're not an idiot anymore.
Yes.
You're like moving up a little bit. You're a little more.
You
yes.
get to have cool discussions with them. Yeah, they treat you a little bit
more. You're not a baby.
Yeah, but yet they're also really patient and kind. That's just, she always makes me think of that. Like your favorite fourth grade teacher or just your favorite teacher in general, really. I mean.
And I think that she is also the kind of gal that would sit on the lawn and have Franzia with us.
Oh, heck yeah, I'm sure. I would hope.
She's, I saw her 100 years ago. When she was on tour for Running Out of Time, that's how long it is. And her kids were little. Yeah, she came to our school in Philadelphia. And I still remember, I am still to this day, Running Out of Time, I had read it not long after. I think I got it that day, like at that, you know, at that time, or certainly after that, because one of the kids was like, oh, you have to read this. She's such a great writer, blah, blah, blah. And then it wasn't even like maybe a year later and that M. Night Shyamalan movie came out. I'm still to this day angry on her behalf.
Yes.
Because he stole, what was the name of that movie?
Oh, The Village. That was
The Village. Yes. Village. And because, you know, so he was from Philadelphia and I was like, and a lot of my friends worked on that movie. And I'm like, you just tell him, I know what he did. I know what he did. I know where he got this idea. I know that he stole the idea. And I think like I read an interview about it and she was like, oh, no, I'm not mad.
She was nothing, a good sport. Blah, blah, blah.
But she should be angry because I literally watched that movie like with my jaw open. I'm like, oh, my God, he stole her premise because the premise is so insanely creative that's not two people don't just happen to, oh, look, we're going to go hide these people in an old historical village. And the outside world is right outside the gates, but they don't know it. Mm-hmm. Come on now. Margaret, we got your back, girl. I'm still mad for you. And that movie came out in like, what, 98 or something? And I'm still mad for her. Anyway, I like to call her MPH. It makes her sound gangster. That's just me. If you are not familiar with Margaret Peterson Haddix, you really should get a good visual image. She's a tall, thin woman with dark hair and the kindest face. And she literally does look like a fourth grade teacher. So here we rock these like badass stories about her. And when you hear about some of these books, you're like, what? It's kind of, you know who it reminds me of? Sort of like when you read Margaret Atwood books before you see who Margaret Atwood is. And then you see her as this like sort of kindly, she looks like this tiny with her curly, beautiful, like sort of grayish white curls. And she always wears like flowy clothes. And you're like, wait a minute. That darkness is in you. I love it. That's the way I feel about Margaret Peterson Haddix. I think that's why I love her so much because you're like, you look at her and she literally is somebody's mom next door or like the neighbor lady. And then you read her books and you're like, God, there's so much darkness in you. I love that. I love that. I love that unexpected darkness. Anyway, so, but before we fangirl more, because it's already getting bad and I'm probably going to have a hot flash soon. You did the drop off. You are now officially an empty nester.
I am officially an empty nester for 1 week. Yes.
Oh, is he coming home to visit?
No. I've been.
Oh, you're one week done.
1 week in. Classes start today for the boy.
And you love it.
Oh, I'm okay. So everyone keeps asking me every day because I think my friends were and family were really worried about me. And every day somebody's like, how are you doing? How are you doing? I mean, the day after we dropped him off, I had like 10 people call me.
Yeah.
It was so sweet. But I have to say, I am feeling good because you know why? He's happy. He seems so happy. And that makes all the difference. Like if he was freaking out or hating it or yes. super crazy homesick or something, I think I would be a mess because then I would have to be the one to be like, no, you have to stay. You have to see it out.
That would be horrible.
You know, 6 weeks, you'll feel better. You know, all that stuff. He's been a good sport. And even if he's just putting up a facade for me, like even that just, you know, like even if he's just pretending to be happy there, I feel like that's on the road to being happy there, right? You know, yeah. sometimes you fake it until you make it or whatever. And I just feel like either way, it's good. It's all good. And I actually got to have dinner with him two nights ago. We ran up there. Some moms ran up there because some stuff that the kids needed. And we wanted to see one of the kiddos from my son's school that made the marching band at a Big Ten school. How freaking amazing is that? So proud of him. And so we went and saw the band play and we got to see our guys for like an hour or so. And I tried really not to be intrusive. I called him and I was like, okay, the moms are coming, you know? And I said, but I have cookies for you that his aunt made for him. Oh my gosh. His aunt made him so many cookies. It was insane. Cause he said, Mom, I would like some more of those cookies. And so I called her up and she made him like 20 dozen cookies. I don't know. It was insane. And I was like, well, I guess you got a side hustle. You can start selling cookies.
That's probably what he's doing knowing your kid. He's probably like, all right, I need more of those cookies. I loved them so much. All right. I got a list up here right now. Who's next? Who's next? Who's ready?
Who needs a dozen? So yeah, anyway, it was hilarious. So I dropped those off. He goes, I guess I should have said how many I wanted. And I'm like, you know, your Aunt Deanna, she loves to go overboard. So he was super excited though. So shout out to Aunt Deanna for making a ton of cookies for the boy.
What kind of cookies were they? Now I want cookies.
She makes the best chocolate chip cookies. Well, because when he called and said he wanted more, I was like, okay, I can't make those chocolate chip cookies. Like she makes them. My chocolate chip cookies never turn quite out.
No, mine are always like too cakey or too something. It's never
mine get too thin. I don't know. Hers are like amazing. And so she made those and she made snickerdoodles, which were really good. I stole a couple of those. I have to say they were so good.
We have to stop this right now because I am really wanting a cookie and Fatty here on a diet yet again. So a healthy lifestyle, I'm saying, not a diet. So can we stop with the diet? We can't talk about cookies. Yeah. But it is also probably why your son is now going to the gym, as he informed you. He's like, wait a minute, I might need the gym.
So he's quite familiar with the campus. He's been to the gym a couple of times doing stuff. He likes his roommates. So now we just have to hope that he likes his classes and that it's all good. So,
very good.
So like very I said, good. I'm doing okay because he's doing okay. Right. That's his parents. That's all it.
Yeah.
For,
that is
right.
Yeah. Well, I just confessed to you before we started that I was a nervous wreck because it finally summer is that wonderful time where you forget about everything.
All
and
the
then
school stuff.
Suddenly, yeah, you forget about all of the stuff that goes along with school. And then you come back and all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, we have to start filling out forms and making meetings and all this. And my oldest is trying out for varsity soccer this week. And I'm a nervous wreck because I don't know what it's like to try out for varsity sports. I mean, I didn't do any of those, so that's very nerve wracking, you know. Mm-hmm. The other day, though, I will say, because I am at home with them during and I work at night. So during the day, like, they're my jam. So I went to the soccer turf with my boys the other day and I was teaching my oldest how to shoot better with his left foot. Now, I think this is important because I was saying things like, all right, settle it. Now shoot. Now follow through. You got to win that ball. And I was like, look at all the words I know now.
Coach Margie.
Right. And some guy was like, you got a good coach there. And this guy is like, oh my God, this fat middle-aged woman has some sort of soccer knowledge because he was shooting better. And I kept saying, I'm like, no, you got to turn your hips. You got to turn your hips, put your hips in the follow through and then shoot. And all of a sudden he was making it every time. And he's like, Mom, how do you know this? I was like, it's just physics.
You're using your science background.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, honey, it's just physics. And he's like, Mom, sports is not physics. I'm like, but it is.
Yes, otherwise, it is.
Your mother could not explain to you how to make, I just picked something and I don't know anything about this sport. So yes. So for all you nerdy parents out there, that have never played sports, but somehow ended up with sporty kids. Just keep in mind, it's all physics. It's all just physics. So
nice.
That's it. Yeah. So thank God. I kept laughing. I'm like, oh my God, this is how nerds coach. I could totally be a coach because I'll just be like, let's have a science lesson and then we'll go forward. So.
It's like Moneyball, right? It's all about the math.
It is though. It really is. It's like the science, and soccer especially is definitely in that. I think football is also because I used to use football in when I taught physics with my older kids. But yeah, it's definitely, it's all a matter of angles and physics and whatnot. So let's hope. Let's hope he makes it. If not, he also just got certified to be a ref. So he's going to make some big bucks this fall refing.
Yeah,
all over,
that's a
all
good
over
job.
The South Shore. It is. Except, you know, when you're 14 and you're a ref, your mom has to drive you everywhere. And that kind of sucks.
And your mom has to sit there while the parents yell at your little ref.
Oh, you know, I'm not going to do well with that. I don't even do well with that when they're on the field playing. Yeah. So it's tough. I'm telling you, I was not cut out to be a sports mom. Why can't any of my kids, like, why couldn't they dance? No one wants to dance.
No
one
theater.
Wants to draw. No theater. Nothing. I mean, a friend of mine was over the other day and we were talking. She's like, oh, the kids are going to take, one of them's in gymnastics and they're very outdoorsy kids, mm-hmm. the rough and tumble boys, you know. Oh, he's taking music lessons this fall. And I'm like, I literally have nothing but soccer 24/7. Maybe throw in a hit of basketball here and there. That's all we get. So anyway, woe is me. Woe is me. But school starts in next week for one and the week after for the other. So hopefully.
Right. We're back at it again. The summer flew by, like crazy flew by.
Yeah. And it's the last week has been sort of like the hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
Like there's something to, like this week especially is like that. Like there's something every day, just enough to like kill your day, but not enough to like give you know what I mean? Like it's just enough. So you're just like, okay, we can't do anything. Okay. But we do have a new obsession. And if you follow our Instagram, I've been putting them up there. My boys and I have been like Kennedy's. We've been playing 18 to 36 holes on the Cape on a regular basis.
Wow. That's
yes,
fun.
Of mini golf. Mini golf.
Mini golf.
It's our new obsession. And we have like four. We went Saturday. We went last week. We have like, there's a pirate themed one. Well, I showed you that one in Yarmouth. We're going to go to the pirate themed one this week.
That's awesome.
That's our new thing.
I was just saying that to my husband. There's a mini golf new one near our house next to a bar. And I'm like, oh, brilliant. That's like, yeah, we could go and have a drink and play mini golf. I would love that.
It's really fun. I got to say, and you forget, and I'm really good at it, which is one of the things. Bowling and mini golf, I can kick my entire family's butts at, including my husband. But that's it. That's where my sports ends. But again, if you look at mini golf, there's physics. And that's right. What the kids said too. They're like, Mom, how do you always get it on par? And I'm like, you just have to read the angle. You just have to read the angle. And it's just physics. My kids clearly aren't that good at science. maybe we'll get there.
Oh, they will.
Anyway. That's all awesome. Right. So
okay,
the time is here and it's time to break out the Franzia.
I wish we could break out the Franzia, I have to say. Oh, by the way, a friend of mine was explaining to me about how boxed wine is so much better for the environment.
That was me, you idiot.
Oh, was that you?
It was me.
So many
I'm that friend.
I thought it was my other friend that drinks boxed wine. Sorry. I have so many friends that drink boxed wine.
See, we're all in the know. No, it was on it was on Boston NPR.
Oh, awesome.
There's a whole thing about it one day on the NPR here in Boston.
So we're even being economically and ecologically friendly.
I mean, we have to drink that wine here to save the earth. And I went right out and bought me a new box. And then I sent you a picture and I said, go get this box because it's really good. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's me. I'm that friend.
That was you. Sorry.
Yeah. Boxed wine for all, because apparently Heather's had a little too much boxed wine already. All right. So shall we dig in?
Yeah. Let's get started.
All right. So you and I bonded over our love of MPH. That's just her gangster name. Margaret Peterson Haddix years ago, right?
Yes.
She's both one of our favorite, like, inspirational writers. One of those people that you like, oh my God, if I could write like this, if only I could write like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you knew more.
she has the Hoosier connection. That's right. Why I know a little bit about her. Yes.
All right. So you have to give us a little history on the woman, the myth, the legend, MPH, and go.
Okay.
We should make her. Oh my God. We have to make her documentary biography later, but go on. She's going to put a restraining order out for us. Okay. She's like, those women are nuts. Why do they love me so?
I think we might need t-shirts. That's what I was thinking.
Oh my God. You know, when you go to the basketball game, they have this giant, like at the Celtics game, they have like this giant masks, those giant cutouts of different players' heads. We can get some of those.
Okay. Anyway.
Now she's getting us arrested. But
yeah, now we're getting restraining orders.
You better watch out because you're way closer than I am.
I know. I think actually we could kind of meet in the middle, which would be awesome. But anyway, okay. Margaret Peterson Haddix is a farm girl, which is really why we love her. I mean, we always find the farm girls no matter what we do, even if we're not trying.
We can smell it. It's like lingering cow poop from the 70s.
Yeah. And she grew up in Ohio. She went to college at Miami University. She's a little bit older than us, but not by a ton. And she currently lives in Columbus, Ohio. But
I love Columbus, Ohio. Yes.
It's a good city. And so she studied journalism, creative writing, history. And then after college, she lived in Indiana for a while. She worked as a journalist. I think she wrote for the Indianapolis Star, but there were like two papers back then, so I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was that one. So the coolest story, when she came to speak at the library near me, she told this awesome story about Indiana and why it's so special to her. But she really liked writing for the paper, but she was assigned to write about Connor Prairie while she was here. And that I think it was a little bit after it opened, maybe even, but it's a living history museum that's kind of dedicated to the pioneer and Civil War eras of Indiana history. So it's so fun to go there.
It's really cool.
Cool. And so they have actors in costume and they all have their stories to tell, and there are cool homes you can walk through, schools,
shops. There's all the shops.
Yeah, the shops. The guy who makes the Barnes horseshoes.
The blacksmith shop, the candle shop, everything.
People who make pottery. So you can watch them do all these things.
I'm the biggest sucker for those things too. I mean, we have Plymouth Plantation or Plymouth.
Oh right,
Pawtucket here. There's another one like out by past Worcester that like I don't know why I'm like nerded out, and I swear to you it is because I read that book, and I'm always like obsessed, like, are these people, do they know? Like, is this like running out of time?
Yes. So after she wrote the article about the Connor Prairie, that's kind of what she says inspired her writing Running Out of Time, which is set in a village where it seems to be in pioneer times, right? Basically, but then you find out that it's actually modern times and these people have been paid to live like this, right?
But they don't know. The kids don't know.
Right. The kids,
the adults signed on to live that life. And people like school groups are watching them from the outside through windows, which I thought that was the creepiest part, but I loved it most.
I know. It's so creepy, but awesome. Yeah. So that's so neat. She has like that. We call this in Indiana, the Hoosier connection. It's a huge thing in Indiana. If you can find a Hoosier anywhere in the world, our news teams will find them.
Boy, that's true.
It's so true. If there's like a flood in India, they will find the one Hoosier that lives there and interview them about it.
Or like my cousin Steve lives in Indiana. So here, let me tell you this. Like that's usually what they are like. Oh, it's a Hoosier connection. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
God bless them. They don't have a lot going on out there.
So. Yeah, but you can find an Indiana person pretty much anywhere you go. So I will say that is true. And that was Running Out of Time was like her first book. And she wrote it, I think, when she had her first kid. That's when she switched from journalism.
Yeah, it had to be like the late 90s, right? It was like mid to late 90s, I think it came out.
But since then, she's written over 40 books for kids. I mean, she is prolific. I mean, she makes everyone else look like they're wasting their lives. She's most known for her two series, Shadow Children and The Missing.
1997. I'm sorry. That's when she came out. So, I mean, if you look at the bulk of her work, if that comes out in 1997, girl, been going hard.
40 books, over 40 books. That's crazy amount of books. And she also wrote one of the 39 Clues books, which that, you know, those are really
popular. We have that one. I haven't read it yet.
Okay.
That cool. We have that one because you know why I had to buy it, because she wrote it.
Yeah. So she's written series and standalone books. So we just recently, she came out this year, 2022 in March with a new, I'm assuming this is a standalone book.
It is disappointingly so.
Yeah.
It is. According to her website, it's a standalone, because I went there seeing if maybe there might be more, but it says no, this is listed as one of her standalones.
Okay.
Which is really rare for her. She doesn't do a lot of standalones. She has a separate, but not as like she has a tendency to give you like two or three.
That's true.
In a series, is what I was really hoping, but I was going to get one more, School for Whatnots, but no go.
So the book that we read is School for Whatnots. It's her latest one. It just came out. So Margie, you want to tell us about School for Whatnots?
Like you said, it came out just in March of this year, and it's the most recent, and it's a standalone. And MPH does love herself some robot children. Oh, and when gosh. I first started reading this, so there's this a series called the Over Their Heads, Under Their Skins or Over Their Heads. Regardless of the name of this series, there's two books in it. And the first one is called Under Their Skin. And then the second one is called In Over Their Heads. And I don't even know like what got me reading these. I just read these like last year or the year before. Just randomly, I picked up Under Their Skin. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, I can't stop now. And I had to read the other one. And these are about like these siblings that were human who then found out that other members of their family were androids,
wow.
including like some step siblings or whatever that were robot children. And it was all about like them trying to get to the bottom of why these robot people existed and how they were existing in their family. And oh my God, it all happened. Like a large chunk of it happens in a cave. Oh, it was, they're very good books. And but those are the Under Their Skin and Over Their Heads. So I was like, oh, here we go again, because right off the bat in the School for Whatnots, you have robot kids. And I'm like, well, all right, here we go. But it was not at all the same. Well done. But of course, our goddess would never do that same story twice, because that's how she is. So let's see, where should I start? So the School for Whatnots.
It's going to be hard to talk about this story without giving spoilers.
Yes.
I was thinking about this last night. I was like, there's so many spoilers in here. Do we do them or do we not do them?
Well, let's start with the beginning. So the main characters are Josie and Maximilian. Now, Maximilian is born at the very beginning, and his mother says from the get-go, she's going to protect him by surrounding him by whatnots. And whatnots, we soon find out, are basically like robot children that rich people buy or rent or whatever you want to consider. Like they'll fill the classroom with whatnots and fill the entire child's life with whatnots, these like robot children, so that they can spare them the pains of bullies and childhood traumas and all that sort of stuff. So the whatnots will become their playmates and they'll become their classmates. And then every time that something happens, the child's totally protected. The whatnots can't bully them. As we learn in the book, and I guess we should have figured out from the get-go, I didn't even think of that, that does not prevent the rich kid from being a bully, because they can be as horrible as they want.
But that was kind of his mom's point, is that they don't have any regrets because they're not bullying actual children as they're growing up and learning how to interact with kids. They're bullying robots. So it's almost like a freebie, right? Like they're learning how to interact without actually harming anyone.
Hurting anyone.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That does make sense. All right. You took more than I did away from that. Good for you. You're a much wider person than I am in that respect. You're deeper than me. But yes, that makes more sense. So then each summer, the whatnots would be sent away for upgrades, both programming upgrades, and then they would make them just a little bit bigger so that the kids wouldn't really realize that the robot kids would grow like the regular kids. So their whatnots would grow just like the regular kids. And they were supposed to be recharged every night. And the rich kids never supposed to have any clue until fifth grade, because the whatnots end at the end of fifth grade. So after fifth grade, they actually have to go to a regular school. And by that point, they can kind of buy them into a school that they want. And they feel like the kids have enough lessons under their belt that they're not going to be eaten alive, which is a major problem with the flaw in this plan, because the worst time you ever want to send your kid to school is middle school. But anyway, I know,
that's what I was thinking about too.
I mean, as someone who has spent like now at this point, 30 years in middle school, that's the last time you want to like jump and throw them into the pool.
Right. But they do kind of have a backup plan that if they don't think their child's ready, they can stay with the whatnots, right? They have like a summer to decide.
Yes.
Right. Like if their kid can move on or not.
So things, of course, go wrong because that's the way it is. So on the first day, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, but I think it's okay to tell you that Max, on the first day of school, there's one girl that he notices it's very different than all of the other kids in class, and she's dirty. And her hair is a hot mess, and she's very wiggly. bubbly and she's outspoken and teaching Max, the rich kid, how to jump in mud puddles and telling him that he shouldn't be named Maximilian because it was going to be too many letters to write. So he just needed to shorten his name to Max. Brilliant young girl. And that's Josie. And Josie is supposed to be a whatnot, but Josie's not a whatnot. And you kind of figure that out immediately that something's amiss. Josie's very, very poor. And her father has made a deal with the whatnot agency that they trained her up until she was five and prepared her with everything she would need to know, like she was a whatnot. And then she goes in and poses to be a whatnot. She lives at the school by herself with a caretaker of some sort during the night. In the day, she gets up just like the whatnots and she goes to class just like the whatnots. But it's to make them seem a little bit more realistic. That's the whole concept of putting a real kid into the class so that there's a little bit of life besides just the robots. Of course, that's where our story starts. And that's where everything goes horribly awry because it's fifth grade when we meet the kids and their time is up. And Josie doesn't want to never see Max again, though she knows the whatnot rules and she knows she's never going to see Max again. So as he's getting ready to go on his European vacation, she leaves a note under his computer that says, "No matter what they tell you, I am real." And Max gets a little fishy and finds the note a little too soon. He wasn't supposed to find it till he came home from vacation, but he found the note too soon. And then chaos ensues.
The adventure begins.
It was. And it's a lot of really good
twists and turns.
There's a narrator that's so brilliantly used in this book. And there's times when the narrator, like you're reading the chapter and you're like, wait, what? And then you flip to the narrator page and the first line is, wait, what? Like the narrator speaks directly to the reader. And the narrator is like, wait, did you get that? Because I didn't get that. What just happened? It works so well to move the story along.
Oh, yeah.
And to really personalize everything. You feel like this narrator is speaking directly to you.
Yes.
What did you think overall? Like, what's your thought? What were your first thoughts on the book?
When I first started in, I just instantly had a big smile on my face. I just loved how it pulled you right into the story.
Immediately.
And you just had this oh, we're about to get into some cool stuff. I just felt so happy when I started it all the way through. There was just so much to keep the story moving forward. Like you're saying, the narrator was brilliant. And the narrator was so brilliant because the narrator didn't know all of the story. So that was so cool. So you're finding it out together with the narrator, they're with you. I mean, it just all of the way it was set up just made you feel like you were in the story with them.
Yes, definitely. You were definitely part of the story.
Yeah. And I love the way she divided it up where you get Max's life and then you get Josie's life, and then they kind of comes back around to where they're together again. And it just was so cool. And even just with Max and Josie, it was so fascinating. But then, she adds at the second half of the book, new characters get added in that were really interesting too. And of course they have sort of a gauntlet they have to run at the end.
Yeah.
And just amazing lessons that don't seem like lessons. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing about really great writers is they can impart lessons to kids without it seeming like it. And it's just brilliant. It was so brilliant. I mean, so many things I was like, oh yeah, that was a good thought. And then the next line, oh wow, that's a really good thought too. I was just like, wow, this is amazing.
Well, and the thing too, it's like, I didn't like Max a lot of the time, but he had really great growth.
Yes.
And even Josie, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, would you just shut up? Which I think is such a great sign, because I think a lot of times, especially in middle grade, writers don't want you to not like our main character, or they want you to be able to see a flaw, but not really just be like, ugh.
Right.
Or they go over the top where you don't like them. And but she danced the line just perfectly as it was needed. So you're like, Max, you're such a twerp. But then you're like, oh, poor Max.
I know.
It's like not within his control. And the same for Josie. You're like, Josie, shut up and sit down. Okay, don't sit down, girl. You need to stand up. Okay, good.
Right. And I think that switching perspectives like that kind of gave that to you, because you would be in Max's head and you'd be like, geez, Max, come on. And then you would see Max from Josie's perspective and you'd be like, oh, they just really cared about each other and watched out for each other, even with their flaws.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty authentic friendship and also authentic middle grade kids learning and growing and figuring out things that they thought were right when they were kids aren't right. It's just that's pretty standard fare for middle school kids. So I just thought it was brilliant, really brilliant and fun.
And did you feel satisfied at the end?
Yes. I felt like it maybe went on a little bit long, but I liked it. I thought it was
like the last. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I could. I agree with that. But I also think that part of that was also that I'm always used to being the first, like one of the books in the series. So yeah. Therefore, I was kind of expecting a cliffhanger so I could get the next book. Right? You know what I mean? Like, so I think that's probably why I was like
it kind of overly wrapped it up probably because of that, right?
Because I'm not used to that. Yeah. And you know, she does her research. She definitely knew about the androids and their creativity behind the androids and the way that they were programmed. It's explained enough that you feel like, okay, I get it, but not so much that you're like, oh God, I don't need to know like what all of the inner workings of it are.
And also not so much that it would date it.
Yeah.
Sometimes when people go into too much detail with technology, then that really dates a story because technology changes so rapidly. And I felt like the way she wrote about the AI, it was very, not generic, but you know what I'm saying? Like it could fit and it, you know, 10 years from now, it'd probably still be appropriate.
I think that was the same way from under their skin. It's the same because I feel like it's an older book too. Like one of her earlier books, you don't get it. Like you don't feel like, oh wow, this isn't dated or anything like that at all. Yeah, I agree. Again, a fine work by Margaret Peterson Haddix.
So much fun. The School for Whatnots. I mean, right away when you're like, because the title is so interesting. And then right away when you find out what whatnots are, you're like, oh yeah, this is cool.
And I have to say that the whatnot is a very common term in the New England vernacular.
Is it?
And okay. Yes. Like I'm going to go to the Packy and whatnot. And then we went over there and did, you know, and she said this and whatnot. So I thought it has a totally different meaning to New Englanders, which I think is really funny. So that's just many, many words. Many, many, many words in Boston have been bastardized. So there we go.
Aw. Yeah, I thought that was a clever, because that's sort of an old-fashioned term too. I mean, people don't use it as much anymore. So that's why I kind of liked it too, because it's so intriguing.
I love it. I give her two thumbs up, as always. Box of Franzia for you, Margaret.
Definitely. We're going to show up.
And one for this, Margaret, too.
Boxed wine all around. All right. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with this week's Pick Six. Okay, so since The School for Whatnots by Margaret Peterson Haddix was literally a masterclass for middle grade writers, this week we decided for our Pick Six, we're going to talk about some of our favorite middle grade tropes. Margie and I've read, several hundred books at this point?
Yeah, right.
And so some of the tropes really start to stand out after a while, and some I really love. A lot of genre fiction, you have to have certain tropes in order for it to kind of fit into that genre or for readers to want to read it. But I think that in middle grade, you have a lot more leeway and there are a lot more tropes you could go with. But there are a few that just kind of have my heart, you know, and I'm sure yours too. So do you want to kick us off with your favorite three tropes?
Well, you know, my first favorite trope is the fat kid saves the day. I love a fat kid, but then a fat kid that saves the day and does that embracing their full fatitude is like my favorite. Like a perfect example is The Supervillain's Guide to Being a Fat Kid by Matt Wallace. That is like ideal. Like he's a fat kid and he learns how to deal with being a fat kid by using an evil genius to coach him through. And that was just a phenomenal book. And the fat kid saved the day and won the ribbons, won the prizes, won everything. And there was no sort of like, poor me, I'm a fat kid. And the same with Jackson Pierce's The Double Cross, where the fat kid is a secret agent and no one expects him to be a secret agent or a successful secret agent because he's a fat kid. And of course, he saves the day. So that's my definitely. I love the fat kid saves the day. What do you got? What's your first one?
I have my very favorite one is grandparent as a friend or partner in crime.
I love that. Yes.
I know. There were so many grandparents that we've loved in the middle grade books we've read, but I think some that stand out for me were the grandmother in Song for a Whale. She helps take her granddaughter on this great adventure in searching for the whale, which I thought was great. So she was kind of like a partner in crime. And then there's also Rick's grandfather in Rick by Alex Gino.
Oh, he's my favorite grandpa.
Yeah, he was sort of a funny, kooky, like cross-dressing grandfather that Rick got to hang out with, started having a new relationship with in the beginning of that book. And it was just fun to watch it develop as they got to know each other.
Definitely.
Good and one. I'm sure I could list a million more, but those were the ones that just came to the top of my head.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just love a good grandparent in middle grade books, because also it's so nice because it's removed from the parents who might be harder on a middle grader. You know, the grandparent is just there kind of for fun and for unconditional love in a lot of these stories. And it's a nice, I don't know, it's a nice adult in the room, you know?
And I also think that, like, if you have a grandparent, I look at my children's grandparent and grandmothers, they don't have any grandfathers, but my children's grandmothers are both incredibly ornery.
Yeah.
Incredibly ornery. And they do things with my children that I'm like, are you kidding me? Which I think is such a great, yes, harness that into a character, because I mean, the one in Turkey and the one in Des Moines are both equally ornery, and their methods might be different of how they could get my children in trouble, but they do it equally well.
I think kind of hand in hand with a grandparent also is the librarian. I love a good librarian in a story too, like as an adult character in a story. So grandparents and librarians kick butt in middle grade.
I like that. Yeah.
Okay. What's your second one then?
So my second favorite is like the goofy kid that takes on the monsters and wins. Mm-hmm. And like the perfect example, I know we've had a ton of examples of this, but the one I kept thinking of was like the Charlie Hernandez books, Charlie Hernandez and the League of Shadows. But those Charlie Hernandez books, Charlie Hernandez is a goober, an absolute goober. And he ends up like sort of like a Don Knotts kind of kid, you know, where he's like falling over. How about that one for a dated reference, Don Knotts? just showed our age there. Like, and you were like, yeah, I get it, because we're old. And then, meanwhile, somebody that's like 25 is like, what? Who is this man in Knotts? But sort of that sort of, you know, hot mess that then ends up taking on monsters and finds themselves as being, you know, kind of a superhero-ish kind of person. So
I like
that's
it.
My, like the goofy kid that has to fight the monsters.
Yeah.
I love that. What do you got?
My second one is kids that have like super talents or awesome side hobbies.
Yeah.
So many books have that. And I feel like that just kind of goes along with the fantasy for middle grade kids that, like, obviously they're a little bit exaggerated for what actual middle school kids could maybe pull off, but it always, I love
it because
it's the fantasy component and I love it so much. Like in Song for a Whale, the main character repaired old radios.
Yeah.
Remember? You know, I thought that was cool. Lightning Girl that had, she was like a math genius.
Yes.
Miscalculations of Lightning Girl. And then there were like the really good cooks, like Midsummer's Mayhem. I think of that one because she entered the cooking contest. Yeah. In Stuart Gibbs' books, the ones that I read that were set in space, The Waste of Space, and there were a bunch of them. Those kids all had like amazing talents that they could put to use in space, you know, sciencey talents. And then Better Nate Than Ever, you know, he was like this acting genius, basically. I mean, so many books, they all have like either like this really super talent or hobby. Manatee Summer, that was one of our recent books that I read that I really enjoyed. And the two main characters were cataloging animal species in their area as their summer hobby.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just cool stuff that can inspire kids, show them what they're capable of doing, and also ties into a greater story. I just think is really cool. It's not always like the main part of the story either. It's like a side, like in Song for a Whale, she repaired radios. That wasn't the main story. It was just a hobby that she had. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool. Okay. What's your last one? Are we on your last one?
You know how I roll with spies. Like my favorite thing ever is spies. I love spies so much. So a kid that has the secret life as a spy is my favorite. Like City Spies, the James Ponti books, the kids that are there. Yeah. They're spies that solve all the world's problems. Like The Genius Files, Etiquette and Espionage, Gail Carriger.
Yes.
I mean, there's a gazillion of them out there. I just ordered some new ones for my little guy too. And what was it like? The League of Unexceptional Children. That's the one I just got for my little guy. And so they're the same thing. Like they're kids that they're spies. So I love Spy Kids, not the movie Spy Kids, but I love kids that are spies, like anything that falls into that
whole
genre.
Secret Life.
Yes. Yeah. Where they have all the gadgets and they have everything that they need and the skills to become,
that's awesome.
You know, absolute eccentrics. I love it. So yeah, that's my jam. What's your last one?
It was really hard to choose because, and you know, I'm not even getting into all the fantasy tropes that are awesome.
Yeah. But I was surprised you didn't have like dragons or something in
there. I know I did. Well, I will say I love a book with a house, a cool house that has a whole bunch of mysteries or histories in it. I will say that. But I think for my last one, it's so important. There's also things to avoid. And one of the tropes that I always kind of harp on in picture books, in middle grade, in whatever you're writing for kids is to don't be preachy.
Oh, yes.
Don't be too direct with your messaging. And I think that The School for Whatnots is a perfect example of this because she imparted so many amazing lessons in this story, even mm-hmm. lessons to parents, by the way. As I was reading this book,
yes.
I was feeling a little bit judged. You know, like the parents trying to protect their precious little babies from any bad thing, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, just the messaging in that book was amazing. And to kids to like overcome that, their parents feeling that way, you know, and how to manage it. But none of it was in your face. It was all a part of the story and the characters and the action and everything. You know, it's in there. It doesn't have to be in your face. One of my biggest pet peeves is when parents come to me for picture books that will teach their child like not to be mean to kids or not to do this or right. not to do that. I'm like,
right.
how about we just inspire them to do stuff, you know, like to have great friends, which there are so many picture books that show kids how to have great friends without being like, you don't do this. You know, I mean, I don't know.
But you say the parents that need the book to teach things haven't quite got that lesson themselves.
I know. They're getting there, which is why I usually try to direct them to things that don't say, you know, like how to go to bed at night or whatever, you know, like things that are a little bit more just fun ways of approaching those things.
Yeah.
I think everything should be fun in approaching difficult or just any kind of, you know, learning issues because kids haven't been on this planet for very long. And I feel like sometimes we spend so much time telling them what not to do and that they're doing everything wrong. And for them, it's the first time doing everything. Everything is new. And, you know, sometimes they just need a little space to figure it out themselves. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox.
You say that like it's only kids. I'm 50 years old and I feel like I just need a little space to figure things out myself.
That is very true. That is very true. And don't I know this week has been me giving myself some space to like let my little college kid go. So yeah.
I find that even at the ripe old age of 50, I'm still learning very, very important lessons.
Yes.
That I'm still trying to figure out. Like yesterday, I was telling you, it's a prime example. Yesterday, I was telling you, I was a very avid runner through most of my 20s and 30s, and then got sidelined by a few knee surgeries in my 40s and was done. I was done. I was like, I'll never run again. And I found this wonderful running program that literally is for fat women over 40. And I have learned so many things so far since I started this program that I was like, look at this. Here I am. Something that I did for like 20 years and I thought I knew everything about, and then I thought I would never be able to do again. And I'm suddenly like taking these lessons because somebody gave it to me from a different approach. Like, you know what I mean? Like somebody gave me a lesson that wasn't about like, this is what you have to do. This is what you cannot do. Like, no, well, if you do it this way, maybe it'll work. Maybe you do this, maybe you do that.
Maybe you'll have fun. Yeah.
Right. You don't have to go. Yeah. You don't have to go kill yourself. And you know, just the concept of like, you might have bad knees, but you could do this instead. Or if mm-hmm. if you prime it with this, it's going to counter that. And I'm like, wow, this is like mind blowing. So everybody needs new lessons. That's what I say.
I agree.
You gotta learn the lesson. Somebody, and it's the same as a teacher. You know, you can deliver the lesson one way,
right, and
on. Kids will right. get it. And then, you know, you deliver it the next way and two more will get it. You never let it take, you know, everybody takes from things a different way. And I think mm-hmm. the same is definitely true with tropes, definitely true with tropes and books and whatnot. You see
whatnot.
That? See what I did there? And whatnot. You know, that's what happens when you move around a lot after you live somewhere for a while. Like, I don't know how many times I've been like, that's a wicked bad one you got there. And I'm like, what has happened? It just sucked. It gets into, you know, I mean, like it's 4 years. I guess it's time, you know, like it sort of creeps in. My kids are like that. They're like passing the maracas. I'm like, oh my God. The little one's bad. He's really got, he's like, oh, the maracas. And I get his maracas.
I love it.
Whatnot. I got to go get me some maracas and whatnot at the school supply store. And stop up at the Packy for a couple of drinks on my way.
there's something about accents like that, though, that just make you feel at home. You know what I'm saying? Like, whenever I hear a Chicago accent, like, we have some new neighbors and they just moved down from Chicago, and I could listen to them talk. Like, I just sit there and I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm home. That's the best. You know, the hard A in the Chicago accent is terrible, right? It's a hard A. It's just a horrible sound, but I love it so much. I miss it all the time.
That's the way I have to say that about the Hoogies. Like, I was watching something the other day, and Kevin Bacon, who's a Philly boy, was like doing the Philly accent. Yeah. And because his daughter was in Maribeestown, he was talking about teaching his daughter how to get a good Philly accent, because no one can do it if you're not like from there. It's weird. And I was like, oh, he's like, I'm going to the Wawa. I'm going to get a hoagie. And I'm like, oh, you got it, man. I know that one. I know that one. I feel like my kids will probably be that way with this like nasty Boston accent. It's rough. It's rough. And it's so funny because there's been a guy from Boston on 90 Day Fiance and all of them keep making fun of him. I'm like, I don't know why you're making fun of this guy. Everyone here talks like that. There's just no ah. There's no ah in Boston. Anyway. I love it. Anyway, we got a new and exciting episode coming up next, right?
We're going to my happy place. We're going back to historical fiction.
I hate historical fiction I hate historical fiction as much as you hate realistic fiction. Like, you'll suffer through it if it's a good story. Like, I'll suffer through it if it's a good story. But I will never on my own pick up historical fiction. I'll never be like, oh, can't wait to see a bodice ripper. No, that's just not my jam. Not in movies, not in books, nothing. But I am super excited about mine. And I have had this one on my list for almost a year since it came out. And I'm reading Show Me a Sign by Anne Claire Lizzotta, I think is how you say it.
Okay.
And it is a really interesting book about a group of deaf people on Nantucket at the turn of the century.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I'm really psyched about that. I don't know how I keep ending up with all these books that happen on the Cape and Islands, but, you know, when in Rome.
Yeah, you got to go with what you like. And I'm going to be reading Yonder by Allie Standish.
What period is it?
Yonder is set in World War II, and it's about a boy on the home front. I picked this one because it kind of made me think of Richard Peck, who's one of my favorite authors. And so I think this will be fun. I'm kind of excited. And I love World War II books. Those are my go-to for especially like adult books. I've read so many World War II books this summer. So like the Alice Nutt work. Oh my gosh, that was a great book. Anyway, so yes, I will be reading Yonder by Allie Standish about World War II home front. So that wraps up this episode. Or what episode was this? Did we even say
52? Just like you. Oh. Just like you, 52.
Same age as me. So that wraps up episode 52 of Tulip Mamas. If you like what you've heard, if you'd enjoyed hearing us fangirl about Margaret Peterson Haddix,
if you would like to see a copy of the restraining order that she's probably put out against us, then you can probably find that if you Google it really hard.
Leave us a review and share us. We'll love you forever.
And if you don't like us, please don't take out a restraining order on us.
MPH.
Please. Pass it. Share us with your friends, though, so we can get out and spread the word. I've noticed that there's a lot of people in a lot of places asking, like, oh, I need some books for my kids. Well, send them to us. We've got the books for your kids. Send them to us on our Instagram at TWO Lip Mamas Podcast on Instagram. Send them to our Tulip Mamas Facebook. Send them to our website, www.tulipmamas.com. Find us where you get your podcasts, everywhere. Just send them our way.
Yes. And we will be happy to tell them what their kids should be reading.
And you. We'll tell you what you should read, too.
That is true.
We like to share our opinion.
We do. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Have a great week. Bye.